Welcome, everyone, to the Justin and Ryan Bizarro Show. I'm Justin Bizarro. I'm your host. That's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. You can find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. And you can find me personally on Instagram at Justin Bizarro, B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. We do not have a separate Instagram or Facebook page for this podcast because I do run, well, I host four podcasts, and I actually now run six podcasts. So, there you go. So I'm not going to keep, I couldn't keep track of all the Instagram or ask a team to do it. So we try to consolidate. You can find us on Justin the Food Entrepreneur Show. You can find us on the Centurion Leadership Italian Show with Justin Bizarro. And you can find us on the Night Dasher with Justin Bizarro. As we've started to relaunch that, went through some things, some copyright things, some trademark things there on the word Dasher, considering it's trademarked by DoorDash. So we've changed the spelling and used a name of someone's name to get around that. So there you go, everyone. So that being said, I have a very special guest with us today. I have Justin from Unlimited Solutions from Charleston, West Virginia. How are you doing today, Justin?
Yeah, I'm great. Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Justin, let's just dive right into it. You and I talked a little bit out at the beginning. We obviously run in similar circles. We've now talked for a while. We know each other. I'm going to go see you in New Jersey for this event you're doing for bodybuilding competition. And so, you know, I think that the audience would love to hear your story. And so let's go all the way back to the beginning. Let's sort of talk about your entrepreneurial journey, because you have a pretty cool one. You have a lot of following, and what you're doing for the food and nutrition space and the health space, I would say, is phenomenal. So let's go all the way back to baby Justin and talk about your story.
Sure. Yeah. So, I grew up a blue collar family. Didn't have a ton of entrepreneurs in the family whatsoever, but you know, for me, I learned how to work hard, how to show up. And my parents, they worked multiple jobs to survive in the environment we were in. So that was kind of the vision I was shown. We weren't poor, but we couldn't afford food stamps, but you know, we were poor enough that we didn't have a lot. And I just know that gave me some kind of drive to be different, to I think Ed Milet says, be the one in the family. And I feel like I am that. I grew up, didn't have a ton of that, but it was, I was always athletic. And then, got through college and got into my career. I spent 16 years in the mining industry, learned sales. So got into a sales role, got promoted as an entrepreneur through that company, learned a lot. So basically worked from the ground up, from an outside sales rep to a manager of a department, to a director of sales, to chief sales officer and a board member of that company. So I was responsible for North and South America, sold over $300 million of mining equipment in that time frame. So I've sold on five continents, of over 30 countries, have provided a really great life. But about 6 years ago, I really found the passion for bodybuilding. And then, through my own transformation, through my own drive, fell into coaching of that. So, I've maintained my own focus in bodybuilding, competing, and then really fell in love with helping people. And so I've been coaching people last 6 years, tremendous amounts of transformations, changing lives, husband, wives, dads, moms, single people. Like it's been truly a blessing to be able to change people's lives.
I love this. So when you were during the 16 years, when you were with the mining equipment company, were you in shape? Were you bodybuilding them? Were you going to the gym? Talk to me a little bit about that. Or is it something you discovered later in your life? Cause I figured your 16 years, it makes you about 38 maybe when you left.
Yes. I'm 40. Yeah. So, I worked out, but I wasn't intentional about my nutrition. I wasn't intentional about my diet. you know, I entertained a lot of clients, and you know, someone like you, you understand what that means. Entertaining people means you drink a lot, you party, you go out and eat great food at a lot of places, travel a lot, wasn't getting a lot of sleep, and completely just, you know, let my body go. So I got, you know, the quote unquote dad bod, wore it all in my stomach. So, you know, it was kind of embarrassing because, you know, I was training and working out still. And I saw a picture. I was at a convention in Las Vegas, and I took a picture. I was out by the pool with the wind. And when I went back and looked at it, I was like, oh my God. Like, I actually, in my mind, I thought I looked good, but dude, I looked terrible. And I use that photo now when I do my comparisons or show someone, you know, what is possible if you focus on discipline and change. So no, when I was traveling, doing all that, no, I didn't take care of myself whatsoever very well at all.
It's interesting that you say that, because I spent about, I started focusing on my nutrition and my lifestyle about 14 years into my businesses. But I agree with you. The alcohol, the food, the eating out, the entertaining, the constantly going out. You know, I had to really work on it as an entrepreneur. And I just want to anchor this for the audience, is that I really had to focus on the places we ate, the food and drinks that I consumed. And eventually, I eliminated alcohol altogether, especially over the last 6 years, just because it became a distraction and it was keeping me from, I felt, living up to my potential. But I agree, the entertainment thing and being in business is a big deal. So you have to come up with a game plan. You have to stick to timetables, anyone in the audience, if you're going to be in shape also. If you're going to do 75 hard, for example, which I'm now about to go on to year 5 here pretty soon in the next few months, and as I'm finishing off year 4. And even within 75 hard, I've noticed that I can, you know, let myself go or not work as hard sometimes. I think that's human nature, but I think a lot of it has to do with how I structure my life, how I handle that stuff. And interestingly, when COVID came and we stopped going out and eating and you weren't entertaining anyone anymore, you know, I really dialed in that nutrition, that fitness, that stuff, which, you know, 75 hard certainly forced me to do it, because once I started, I can't get it out of my head. It almost becomes an obsession. But I think that that's a major part of what we're talking about here is, you know, in the business world, you know, it's because someone else doesn't want to take care of themselves doesn't mean that you don't. And it doesn't mean you have to lower yourself to their standards. I think anyone who's out there listens in or is an entrepreneur, I think we often lower ourselves to the standards of our clients or our vendors, because we're trying to build a relationship. But the relationship is actually built by setting an example. That's where we have the most success anyway. It took me a long time to get there, but I agree with that, especially for our employees or our team members. You want to lead by example as much as possible. So let's talk about sales, okay? Because one, I want to just talk about two things. If you're in equipment sales, you were in business-to-business sales, okay? And now you're in, and sales is probably the wrong word, business development, client relations, however you want to look at it. So you went from basically client relations sales to now customer relations sales, okay, or just customer relations. So how is that different for you? How is it different from being business to business to business to consumer?
You know, for me, I don't think it is, right? So business to business, let's think about that transaction. I'm selling to someone that's making a decision on the business's behalf. So I'm not taking money out of their pocket per se, because the business is paying for it. So you still have to provide value and a quality product to this person, because people still buy emotionally, whether they're buying for a business or they're buying for themselves. And so when I was, you know, I've always sold through relationships. I'm not a here's your quote, let's negotiate on the quote. I would always work to build that relationship with my client, whether it was B2B. And I basically just transferred the same approach into my personal business, B2C. it's still about having a relationship with someone that brings up the most amount of value. Because if we have a relationship, from a sales side, I can help you regardless, and then the sales will follow. I don't have to sell anything if emotionally we're connected, if we're at a level of trust and loyalty, and I do what I say I'm going to do, you know, the business will happen. So I've not changed anything from my approach, because I've always driven to look at relationships when helping someone.
I agree. So explain to a little bit what you do now for your clients or your customers. What is Unlimited Solutions actually provide? Like, what do people come to you for, and how can they find you guys online?
Yeah, so we do online coaching predominantly. I got some local coaching here, but it's pretty much online. But it's all geared around fitness, nutrition, you know, and health. So when I'm looking at helping someone, for me, my main goal is, at the heart of it all, we all want to take our clothes off. We all want to be able to look in the mirror, because whether we tell someone else or not, when we look in the mirror and see ourselves, we want to be proud. We want to appreciate the person we see in that mirror, and when we're naked. And so my goal as a coach is getting someone, you know, whether it's 20, 30, 40, 50 pounds of fat off of them, but being able to do that while sustaining muscle, which is hard, because, you know, people can cut calories, get into deficits, do a bunch of cardio, but then look empty, look flat. So what I specialize in is be able to pull that fat off, but keep the muscle, be able to sustain some muscle, so that way we can really shape a body. I typically run 12 and 16 week programs, but I've got clients that have been with me for the 5 years, 6 years of me starting the company. So nutrition, fitness, provide workouts. I custom the workouts to a home gym or commercial gym or whatever they're at. But another side of the business, because I take the health very serious, is I always have my clients run labs. So I've partnered with a doctor. I provide the lab service myself. I make it easy so they don't have to go see their doctor. Everything's done in email, and then they can go get their labs, and then they come back to me, and then I can work with them on a plan if their levels are out of tact. But all the years I spent being an entrepreneur, being a business executive, and living that, you know, heavy, fast lifestyle, being super busy, that's really been able to springboard me into my coaching business to focus on helping entrepreneurs. So the majority of my customers are professionals, executive entrepreneurs. So I design programs specifically for super busy people that, you know, they want to take their health serious. So yeah, fitness, nutrition, transformation type coaching is who I am. Instagram is the best way. It's TIDD underscore Justin. So TID underscore Justin. That is the best way to get a hold of me.
So let's talk a little bit about, you've built quite a presence in this over the last 6 years, bodybuilding. You obviously have to lead by example in this business, because I think that there's a lot of coaches out there and a lot of people that are in gyms that actually aren't in shape, yet they're coaching people to be in shape. I always find that hard to believe, that you want to be a coach and you want to be whatever, but you're not living by the things that you want or you're selling. So you're not actually selling anything. So talk to me about the amount of discipline. What does a normal day look like for you as a bodybuilder? Not, and then we can talk about what the coaching and stuff looks like, but what does a normal day look like for you in terms of trying to maintain this level? Because in order to actually have clients, you've also got to lead by example in this business.
Yeah, I firmly believe that. And to be a leader, you know, you got to get your hands dirty first. And I've always believed that. So yeah, for me, it's completely doing that. You know, I wake up in the mornings, I do my fasted cardio. Yeah, I always post about it, because either my clients or my followers, I want them to see I'm leading this lifestyle. Yeah, I post my food, I leave nutrition tips, I leave recipe tips, I post workouts. yeah, I give a lot of free value on my Instagram page for people to be able to like follow some of that. Whether they hire me or not, they could still, by all means, get enough information to kind of work off of that. You know, I eat my breakfast after my cardio, and I eat every 3 hours. The body can go through 50 grams of protein every 3 hours. So every 3 hours, I maximize the amount of protein that I can get through. I typically work from home. If I'm working from home, obviously that's super easy. If I'm on the road traveling, which, you know, 1 week, 2 weeks a month, that happens, then I'm packing my food, or I have a local restaurant make my food. I freeze that food. I put it in a cooler. I put it in my suitcase. I find a meal prep company where I'm at. So I don't rarely miss. I plan on eating dinner when I travel, you know, steakhouse or something like that, or a seafood place, but I always keep it clean. And then I typically work out around 7, 8 p.m. at night till about 10, 9, 10 p.m. And right now where I'm in a competition stage, you know, then I have a second round of cardio. So my cardio goes until 11, 11:30 at night, something like that. So that would be a typical day. And then I'm working in between all of that.
It's interesting because I'm very much the same. Like, I do most of my working out at night, even 75 hard. I like try to break it out into night and then give my time in between it and then do it again. I'm just more efficient at those times. But I also have to get momentum going into my workout, which is usually getting my work done, because I don't want it weighing on my mind while I'm working out. I want to know that I've accomplished something, and then I use that to grow. But one of the things that you hit on, and I think most people don't discuss or don't talk about, is the importance of having a lifestyle around food. Like, you actually make effort. You have to go out of your way to find meal prep companies. You have to go out of your way to freeze and make food. And most people are like, oh, it's easy to make food at home and freeze. It's not. People don't do it. People don't have those habits. So talk to me a little bit about the mindset around food for you and your eating lifestyle and stuff like that, and what you're doing there, and also how you encourage your clients to live a similar lifestyle.
Yeah. So honestly, it's you just have to commit to the plan or the promises you keep yourself. That's what I tell myself is, you know, this is the body I want. This is how I want to look. This is the health that I want in my life. And then I make a plan and operate off that plan. So it's quite honestly just a matter of making a plan and actually executing on the plan. Now, I realize a lot of people can't do that or refuse to do that. Not that they can't. They just choose not to. And a lot of people lack discipline. And, you know, they can have all the excuses, whether they don't have time or it's too hard or their kids have sports. I got four kids. Like, you can't use those excuses because it's just a matter of being lazy. For me, it's just that is the goal. And so if that's my goal, I execute on that goal. As far as my clients, I work very hard to, one, lead by example, we talked about. Two is just like constant communication. I'm always asking them, especially when I onboard a client, I always ask in the next 6 months, are you traveling? Are you flying? Are you driving? I need dates. I need to know where, when you're coming back, things like that, because if they are taking a trip, let's go ahead and work your plan now. And now knowing nobody, not a lot of people is going to go to the level of discipline that I have when I travel, but my goal with my clients are, let's minimize the damage while you're gone. I'm not going to set an expectation that's unrealistic, because then they're going to hate the program. They're going to feel defeated. And so, you know, what we'll do is just build out a specific plan while they're traveling to minimize the damage. Then they come back and then we do some correction.
I love this. So, I mean, you mentioned you have four kids. You talked about working out at night. Talk to me how, like, you're running a business. You're trying to get your pro card. So, and you're trying to lead by example. So you're constantly being fit because it's a personal goal. How do you manage your family life now? How do you find time for it? How do you, with four children and trying to do a career, and try to do a business? Because I think a lot of people are like, oh, I could just handle a business and barely handle four children. So I think you're a real role model in being able to make time for everyone, at least from what I've seen online and in social media and in the conversations we've had briefly, that this is a priority for you. So how do you balance all of it?
You know, it's the kids get an hour or maybe 2 hours a day, maybe. But I spend my time on the weekends with them. So they know come Saturday, Sunday, we're going to etch out time. You know, we're going to go eat, hang out, swim in the pool. You know, whether they're playing sports, you know, being at those events. So through the week, yeah, they don't get a lot of time. And they understand the goals and everything I'm juggling to give them a life that's different. But I've sat down, had conversations with them. They're older, 12, 13, 16, 18. So I've sat down and had conversations with, you know, the sacrifices that are necessary to get to a better life. Like, we're not mediocre people in this family, and I don't want to be, and I don't want them to be. So I've got to force myself to make sacrifices to live, to be a different person, if I expect them to watch, because they do, and for them to want to be different people. I don't want them to settle and be mediocre when they become adults. And so it's a matter of having communication and understanding with them. So yeah, between, I will say, 4 and 6, I get some time with them here and there. And then when I get home from the gym at night, right now it's summertime, no school, so I typically get to see them for about an hour before bed at night too.
I love this, because you're just, one is you're very set in your schedule, which I think is important for success for anyone. Is if you're going to go to the gym, make sure you try to hit it the same time every day. Like, your body functions within structure. We're animals, we're used to, you know, back in the day, everything was very structured. That's what brought us safety and stuff like that, and security and protection. So I think as humans, we function a lot more in making sure we stick to those schedules. Okay. And that doesn't mean that I don't have 2 hours where I do nothing with kids or with family. It just means it's structured. Because mm-hmm. I don't know how else to do it, say it, but ultimately structure leads to freedom. Ultimately, I don't know how to explain it to anyone. I have more freedom and independence the more I structure my life, the more I use my time effectively, and the more I turn my days into multiple days, meaning family time, business time, personal development time. So there's a lot of that. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, the transition from mining to bodybuilding to coaching, stuff like that. Like, how, I mean, you obviously had to talk to your family and your kids, and there was a transition there. Like, how did all of that go for you? Because I think a lot of people are too scared to leave what they're doing now to chase their passion, especially at, you know, in their 30s.
Yeah, it was completely scary because, you know, I'd slowly built up the business. And then the last 2 years, I decided I'm really going to put focus and be very more intentional about coaching and driving that business. And we're talking about coming from a job, a career where I was making really good money. So that made it different. It wasn't like I was making 100 grand a year and then being like, okay, I could offset that pretty easy. I was making really good money. And so the last 2 years, I said, okay, I have to build the company up to at least get here. If I can build it to here, it'll be hard to offset that income. But around 60% of what I was making was when I was ready to make that switch. My wife works as well, and she does pretty good also. So, I mean, you know, we just had to condense some of our spending habits for a little bit of time. But yeah, it was a matter of just, you know, making the switch, you know, but it was a planned switch. I mean, it was scary at first, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, it's following your passion and finding something. And I didn't find that until 34, you know, that's the kicker. Is I was for the longest time, my goal was to be a number two vice president in a company. You know, I didn't have the confidence. I lacked that a little bit in myself. And And so I was like, I just want to be a really good number two, work my way up through a company, and, you know, lead in the company. And then about 34, actually my wife really convinced me and said, just believe in yourself, start it yourself. You have it, you have what it takes. And she just kept over my shoulder telling me. And I said, okay, I'm going to make a plan. I'm going to do it.
I like this a lot because I think it anchors the support system that's necessary in a relationship, particularly in marriage, or whatever long-term relationships, because there needs to be that support and belief in one another, even though we obviously look at each other's flaws. That's just part of life. But if we focus on them and we don't see that the way to overcoming them is helping that person grow, not getting stuck in them now, that they do grow and look what you've done. Okay. And there was just an encouragement and sometimes we do not believe in ourselves. That's just, I don't know how to describe it, particularly people that will really excel in life. They need that little push from a coach or a spouse or even a child or a grandparent or a parent, like just that belief to put everything together. It's like they have all the pieces. They just need that belief from someone else, you know? And so I think that that's really, really important. I've had that in my life, and I think it's changed my trajectory on numerous occasions and helped me become a better entrepreneur and start more companies and do things regardless of, you know, whether or not I thought I could or not. It was that push and that belief by someone else that actually helped me believe in myself. Now I don't really have a problem with believing in myself as much, but every once in a while I'll notice when someone gives me a piece of advice and it's that push that I'm like, okay, I'm obviously not doing this. I'm hesitating. Someone needed to give me a push. They saw it. So I obviously, even though I think I'm doing well, wow, thank you. You know, and that's also about supporting yourself by having a proper support system and surrounding yourself by the proper friend groups or mentors or coaches or therapists or whatever it ends up being, business people, wherever industry you're in, depending on where you are in the audience. So I think that that's important. So talk to me about role models, leaders you've looked up to, maybe you still do now. Like, give me an idea of, you know, that sort of thing, or people that you may have met that you looked up to growing up. Like, where did you get all this discipline, this mindset? Because it goes beyond just switching to being a bodybuilder. You've obviously had a drive in you from a very young age. So where did some of that come from?
So when I was 12, I knew I had negotiation tactics. I knew I had sales skills. Just because, you know, we didn't have, like I mentioned earlier, a lot. And my mom would constantly get mad at me for not making my bed. And so I negotiated with her to pay me $1 a day to make my bed. And it worked. I was like, wow, okay. Well, we also had to push mow the grass, me and my brother. And he's 3 years older than me. And we had a big backyard. I'm saying, you push my thing, it took 2.5 hours. And he did it for free. I negotiated to get paid $20 to do it. And so I think I fell in love with business kind of then. Even though I didn't really have any role model at the time, a ton. I had an uncle, and I'll talk about him in a second. But, you know, at that same time, and you and I are similar ages, the movie Rudy had come out, and I remember falling in love with that movie about the determination and the drive of him making Notre Dame's football team. And I was like, man, like, you know, this guy that, you know, he's not supposed to be on the team. He doesn't meet the standards. He's small, you know, but he's willing to do anything and everything, whatever it takes, sleep in the janitor closet. You just get his ass kicked on the football field. Just to live his dream. And I remember that impacted me at a young age. And then when I was 13, 14, my uncle, he was a VP of a pharmaceutical company. I only saw him at Christmas, but I'd never been to his house. They moved around a lot. And the first time I ever flown, he flew my brother and I. At that time, he lived in Atlanta, Georgia. He flew us down. And, you know, we get there and I'm like, wow, their home's beautiful. You know, first I'm excited because I'm on an airplane. Home's beautiful. You know, he had a Porsche, he had a boat, he had Cadillacs. And I was like, we go on the boat, seeing the car, seeing the house. And I'm like, this is my family, you know, it was my dad's sister's husband. And so I remember just being like, I mean, if he's in my family and he can have this, like I can have this. And so at an early age, he really impacted me, to be able to really believe that was possible. Now he passed away from leukemia when I was 18. But I think he was kind of that first role model for me as a teenager, to really look up to. You know, and I always look back, it's one of those things like, you know, I wish he could see me now. But then in my early 20s, after I graduated college, got my MBA, I got into the mining industry in the sales. And the man that hired me was the chief sales officer of the company. And so I worked for him for the 16 years. And then he ended up being the CEO and president. And, you know, I worked my way up behind him. He was a great person to work for. He gave great advice, but man, he would give you the rope to hang yourself with, so to speak. If you couldn't cut it, you were gone. And he challenged me, gave, you know, great mentorship. So, I mean, for those 16 years, I owe a lot from you know, a sales mindset to a business mindset. I owe a lot to him. He really, really showed me a lot. So that was probably from a teenage years, my 20s. And then, you know, in the 30s when I become, you know, more of an entrepreneur and getting that mindset, you know, Andy Frazella is probably when I was around, 34-ish is where I found him. And, you know, just following him was huge for me.
Talk to me about the entrepreneurship a little bit, starting your own business from being an entrepreneur, like maybe some stuff you wish you knew then that you know now that you could have guided yourself. Talk to me a little bit about that, because you sort of didn't come out of the entrepreneur world, an entrepreneur world, but then entered it later in life. So talk to me a little bit about that. Because to me, I've always been in it, so it's never been like, I don't know what that's like, to be honest. So it's a personal curiosity also, because I don't know what it's like to go from entrepreneur to entrepreneur.
I think the biggest thing is the risk factor, is making that transition of having comfort, having solidarity, of having that paycheck, to knowing, okay, now it's on me. Now it's on me 100%. And so there's some risk there. And I had tried to start three other businesses during that, you know, before this coaching business. And you know, every time it was with a business partner, you know, they didn't have the same drive, the same passion. I got frustrated because my expectation was, you know, hey, we're equal business partners. We should both be driven here. And, you know, so the first one was in the nutrition space, predominantly in fitness. You know, it was a flop. Couldn't really even get it off the ground because the business partner just lacked execution. Then got into kind of a woodworking business, got it started. The guy ended up having some personal problems with his family. That business dissolved, then got into business with some other guys doing some online courses. And then they didn't put in the work I did. And it was frustrating. So, I mean, I had attempted other businesses, and that's when my wife had said, just stop working with other people. So that's when I decided to bet on myself. But yeah, that from an entrepreneur to an entrepreneur, the biggest thing is just the risk of now it's all on you 100%.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that business partners are hard, especially even if you go like 20 years down the road or 10 years down the road. If you're a growing person and you're constantly seeking uncomfort through growth, you're going to outgrow everyone around you. It's one of the weirdest things, because I believe in partnerships and I believe in teamwork big time as an athlete, big time as a business person. But as an entrepreneur, it's very hard to have multiple people running the business or multiple partners, especially if they don't share the same vision. And by that, I don't mean for the business. I mean for life. I mean that visionary thread that we live by that sews the quilt or the blanket that ultimately becomes our life. And if we look back, that thread is what our life looks like, you know, when we sew it all together. So if we're not constantly moving forward and we're not constantly growing, we're not constantly pushing ourselves or working hard, the individual doesn't only suffer, the business suffers, the team members suffer, the vendors suffer, the clients or the customers suffer. And so I agree with you. Interestingly, I'm in a very similar standpoint to where you are right now. So I have some new businesses and I have some partners there. But I also am really doing well and by being in business by myself. And interestingly, to everyone's aware, you know, when you've been in it as long as I have, or you've had as much structure as I have, unfortunately, you enter the playing field with your team and I don't want to be the star of the team. If I'm in a team environment, I want to be one of the stars, but all of us should be stars. You know, all of us should be disciplined. And I get it. There's some Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. I get it. But all the players are still showing up to practice, except for Dennis Rodman, I guess, at that time. But whatever the point is, you know, everyone's working hard. Everyone's contributing. I guess during game time, Dennis Rodman did show up. That's why they won. But what I am saying is it's hard because many people go into the entrepreneurial game because they seek freedom, but they misunderstand what that freedom is. And that freedom is not time. That freedom is not necessarily the ability to leave work or make decisions or be there for your family. The freedom is that I get to work as hard and determine my own legacy, and my hard work doesn't hit a glass ceiling, okay? Or the distance that my business can go is not, because it's no matter how hard I work, is not determined by some other leader. If I'm the leader and I'm the one working hard and I have the discipline and I keep, you know, doing it, then I will grow the business. You know, and it's one of the reasons Better with Bacon Fat Studios is growing so much right now. It's why we have 6 podcasts. It's why I'm working on Foodtopia, the TV show, with a group of partners under, Agon Productions, and with a partnership with Stephen DeKemper. All of these things, who I also met through Arete, interestingly. And, I have Freedom Foods with Mark Riggs, who's also was an Arete, speaking of networking and surrounding yourself by people. And Justin and I talked about Arete earlier. But I've met a lot of people with similar mindsets that have those core values. If they don't have those core values, it's very hard for me anymore to be business partners with someone or even do business with someone, a vendor or a client. It's weird. Like, I'm very picky about whoever, and I'm even very picky who I even allow on the podcast. Even with trying to get a podcast out every other day on Justin the Food Entrepreneurs, I'm very picky about the food entrepreneurs that ultimately come on, even though I'm rejected a bunch because people are like, oh, I don't want to do a podcast. But I also have learned that I need to reject people also, and that's okay. If they don't fit it, are they going to cost me time? Are they going to, what I think, cause damage to entrepreneurs I'm trying to influence? I have to limit their ability to be on there. It's not the right thing to do. Everyone doesn't necessarily deserve a chance, right? It takes time, and stripes are earned. So there's that as well. And I feel like as entrepreneurs, when you work hard and your business partners see you working hard, they're always like, oh, Justin will take care of it. Justin will take care of it. He's the man. He's the leader. Justin will take care of it. Justin, you lead everyone. You'll take care of it. And eventually, the worst part about it is they all, you know, in a bad situation, those are the very people that'll turn on you and say, oh, Justin was handling it. It's his fault. Well, what do you mean? You guys didn't do anything. You turned it over to me. You didn't do anything. That's why we're in this problem. It's not because I'm doing everything. Like, that mindset is so weird because we live in such a victim blame society that if you have business partners that aren't cutting it now, they're not only not going to cut it later, but they will eventually turn on you if something goes bad and blame it on you because you are doing all the work and they're doing none, and be like, oh, that's your responsibility. You were doing all that. Well, dude, I'm picking up your slack. But they, you know, the world doesn't see things that way. The world sees things as things that were done. The world doesn't see things as things that weren't done. So there's always that. So if you have someone who's not doing the work, but you're doing the work, it's still going to fall on you regardless. So why not just do it yourself? You know, and that's a weird, selfish attitude that people will think of, but it's still putting on my own mask. Like, I can't, I don't want to babysit people. I don't want to be adult daycare for my business partners or my managers or my supervisors. You guys can do the work. You can have your own core values and show up, you know, so.
Yeah, and I've learned, you know, communication's key, creating specific job titles, roles, you know, you do this, I do this, right? And so you can track that, you can monitor it, because you have that responsibility, I have this responsibility. And if it doesn't work out, I mean, cut it fast. Don't hang in there, because I learned that lesson. I hung in one for way too long, and you know, I cut the others pretty quick. One I hung in for about a year and a half, and that's a year and a half of my time wasted that I could have jumped back into my coaching business, launched it faster, and been further along. But that's a lesson I learned, is if it's not going to work, be mindful, communicate, and cut it fast and run. Yeah.
Absolutely. Where are you hoping this goes for you? The coaching, the unlimited solutions, where are your dreams? Where, you know, when you're sitting there and you're visioning and you have your vision boards or whatever you're laying around, you know, where do you see this in 5, 10, 15, 20 years?
I'm currently building a plan up over the next 3 months to boost sales more or less. My plan goal is to create a network that's going to grow my business with what I've done in a year, to do that in 3 months, and then do that in a month. To be able to scale that, I've got to get into a position where I'm hiring a larger team. I'm going to hire other coaches to be able to handle that also. So I got to scale that business to where it frees up more of my time, and then I can move that business in that direction. So, you know, my goal is obviously the total freedom. So that comes along with that is having the money to do that, but also help people. You know, my goal is helping millions of people better their health. That's why I do it. You know, the people that smile and say that I've changed their life, and you know, money's money, but to see the expression and the joy and the happiness and the gratefulness from someone when you know they've tried for years, and that you had a part in actually changing someone's life for the good. Like that's why I really do it. So yeah, scale it up. I mean, to get that total freedom, you know, I really don't plan 25 years. I don't plan 10. I don't really plan 5, just because I like to keep my goals specific. But for me, it's, you know, let me look at 3 years. Let me look at 1 year. The 3 years is always a flexible goal for me. The 1 year is solid. And then I break that 1 year down into 12 months. I create a spreadsheet, what I'm going to do, what are my goals for that year. And then from that spreadsheet, give each goal, I put it where it's going to fall into the month. I break that down to a 30, 60, 90 day plan, work on the goal. And so it's very intentional on knocking the goals out for that year. So that's how I look at strategy and accomplishing goals.
What's your favorite part about this, being an entrepreneur, doing the bodybuilding, forming this business, growing this business? What are your favorite things? What do you enjoy the most, I guess? And I guess we might as well talk about, what do you enjoy the least?
Oh, man. So the most is probably two things. You know, one, helping others do what they think is impossible or they can't achieve. Like I kind of hit on that. That probably is the most from that side. Now, from the bodybuilding side, which is super selfish, you know, some people may say, oh, it's materialistic, or, you know, it's vain or vanity. You know, when I changed my own transformation, then I started competing, and naturally year over year over year, I get better. Number one, at 40, to be able to compete in a very competitive sport, that's fun. And number two of that is to see I'm the one changing my body. Nobody's doing it. I can't buy it. I can't rent it. I can't do anything. Like, that's me showing up day after day after day. And that improves my confidence. That improves my self-esteem. It improves my mental clarity. It demands respect from other people. I know I was on Brad Lee's podcast and yeah, I coached him, for a little bit. We were talking about that, but when you're healthy and fit, you know, people recognize that and respect comes really quick. You earn respect very fast off the front end. So that's probably the greatest thing I like about it. The worst, you know, I don't know. You know, like the worst things that happen to me, it's, I focus on what I can control. What I can control is what I focus on. So when bad things happen, you know, I deal with them, I move on. If it's out of my control, yeah, I really don't sweat it too much. I've learned that over time, over experience. But yeah, you know, not enough hours in the day. Things don't happen maybe as quick as I'd like them to. That's probably the worst. You know, I wish things would happen quicker, but I also realize there's some delayed gratification. I realize there's a certain amount of work that has to be put in to get the reward out of it. So yeah, I would probably just say things, I wish they could move quicker.
Touch on this big time, because I love this topic, what you said about you get respect, okay? Humans, we understand that discipline and consistency is what leads to greatness. We inherently get it subconsciously, okay? And so I'm going to just anchor this with everyone. As I transitioned out of food service partners and the companies were sold over 7 years and some bankrupted because they didn't match anymore and contracts turned over and businesses sold, all of that stuff, I came out and I had been doing it for 24 years. I didn't think what would happen, which is all of a sudden I lost my identity. I had attached it so much to food and food businesses and restaurants and food trucks and all 33 companies we owned at one time that I lost myself, okay? But I never lost the fitness, the 75 hard, and I never lost my wanting to work out. Thank God my stepchildren were CrossFit professional athletes at that time and training constantly and everything. So I didn't lose that piece, okay? But what I had to do is I had to find myself, okay? So I'm like, you know what? I don't want to be a manager. I don't want to go work for someone else. But if I'm going to go work, I need to go learn some other skills. Like, there were gaps in my game. Like, while I was in the food game, I didn't understand pizza making. There were gaps in my game. While I was in the food game, I didn't understand donuts and baking because we bought all of our bakery goods. We would make everything else from scratch, the food from the farms and food service partners for the hospitals, long-term care homes, grocery stores, restaurants, whatever, whoever was our customer or clients, and fit within their specs. But one thing that happened is I knew that I had to, one, humble myself. Two, I knew that I had to go get a diversity of skills, and it was okay if I just started at the bottom, okay, and earned my stripes just because I want the experience. As a manager, I'm not going to understand all the knickknacks of making a donut or making bread or what an oven is if I don't actually go do it, okay? And I did the same with pizza. But one of the things I will find is the level of respect I got from day one, from everyone, including management and managers, still, even though they didn't know me from a person off the street because I didn't promote myself, didn't talk about myself, didn't get my Instagram, hey, I need a job, I'm willing to work, I have a degree, you know, I'd even minimize my degrees. I would even say I only had a bachelor's, I wouldn't even do an MBA because I didn't want to get in this conversation where we're not going to hire you, this is below you, you know, because nothing is below me, so I wanted to learn it. But one of the things I will say is the amount of respect I got from day one by just being in shape, by just being disciplined in that way. And then obviously because I was in better shape, I was able to move around and I understand food. So some of that came easy, but you get a level of respect there. And when you're out there and you're trying and you're working and you're doing things and you're trying to get experience, like I was like, okay, I have this gap in my life. I need to learn as many skills as possible because I already am an entrepreneur. I'm already a leader. I can always, for the rest of my life, grow my brain. I need to go back to the basics and learn as many things I can in the food game to fill the gap in my game. Okay, I need to learn about grocery stores. I need to learn about pizza. I need to learn about donuts. I need to learn about DoorDash and Uber Eats, because those are taking over the food world. You know, so there was a lot of things, and I need to learn about farming. So how do I get more, you know, more than I knew before? How do I get more information now? But through doing that, because I was willing to work hard and I was willing to learn, and everyone could see how disciplined I was physically, it's amazing how much respect you get from people from the beginning. I will say that for sure. And it's not something I expected. I expected, you know, everyone to look down on me, or that I'm an educated person, or pick up on that I was sort of not, you know, I'm a white collar worker doing blue collar work, even though I've always been hands on and nothing's ever been below me in any of my businesses. You can see it even in the end, I was working, making food products when necessary, or helping train a second shift or a night shift, whatever I had to do, with balancing that, not working too much in my business, but also working on it. But I agree with you. I think when people see a discipline, when people see a consistency, regardless of if they've known you for 1,000 years, you know, in my new transition in life, I see that people, there's a huge amount of respect you get just by being in shape, just by taking care of yourself, just by being fit, okay, let alone to the level that you're at, which is beyond where I am, you know, in terms of, you know, bodybuilding and your physique and all that. I like to look good in the mirror and I want to look good naked, but I don't have the same discipline. Mine's more about being an athlete versus a bodybuilder, for example. But it's interesting what happens. And humans respect other humans, so why not go do it? And here's the other crazy part I will say to everyone. The respect I watched, there's other people who were not in shape or overweight that started working out because of my influence. And weirdly, once other people saw them get like a month or two under their belt and start making transition, it's crazy how the respect for those people changed. As leaders, as managers, as supervisors, as employees, the promotions, the opportunities that would take place, how much better they did their job. The discipline, the less breaks, the less, you know, milking the company for time. It all comes back to that fitness thing. And it's the craziest thing to me, because I'm always like, how do companies involve more fitness in their and work? Okay, you have a lunch break. How do you get people to walk for 10 minutes around the building? Why don't we do that? Why don't companies encourage a lot of that? And I don't know legally if there's like a problem with that anymore, or people don't want to be called out of shape or whatever. God only knows. But to me, it seems like if you're running a business, you want the people who have the discipline, who are in shape, who are whatever. And I think a lot of times, I'm going to anchor this for everyone. Sorry, I'm going on a tangent or a commentary thing, is we look at skill set or degrees when we're hiring people, even as entrepreneurs, but we don't look at these core values and this discipline and who the person is and how they lead by example. Okay, because it matters a lot more than the skill set and the knowledge. I will tell you, I've witnessed it. I've watched people, particularly recently, rise up with less skills, less knowledge, because they have the discipline, because they've started taking care of themselves, because they naturally live by attraction, not promotion. They're not promoting themselves. They're just changing themselves, and it's attractive because other people don't know how to do what they're doing. And attraction is what leads people. Okay, so I think that that's a huge part. Sorry, Justin, I went off on a tangent there. But
no, that's a gem right there. Attraction, not promotion. That's actually pretty fire.
Yeah. And so, lastly, as sort of, let's talk about, what inspires you daily, what motivates you. And if you could say anything to the audience or encourage anything or motivate anyone, what would it be? So it's two questions there. One is, how do you motivate yourself? I guess then, how do you motivate your family? And then, in which we talked about a little bit, but then how do you motivate the world around you?
For me, you know, I think motivation is, you know, I think some people can read posts or watch videos or memes and be like, yeah, and that fires them up for a minute. But yeah, I don't find motivation anything like that. For me, motivation comes from achieving goals, you know, and talking about like how I planned earlier with the year and 30, 60, 90. And so as I'm marking those goals off, that's what motivates me, because I have that to me, it does something in my brain that is makes me proud of myself. And so that drives me. I've got a lot going on. I'm making things happen. You know, I feel proud of myself because I've noticed if, you know, and I'm not saying I don't take rest days. I do take a rest day. But I notice if my rest day is not very busy, I tend to get anxiety because I tend to work really quickly and I like having things going on. So motivation for me is just achieving things, you know, keeping the promises I made to myself. That's motivating. As far as, you know, my family, supporting them, giving advice the best I can. I could be a better listener. I try. I'm a problem solver, and I have to dial that back sometimes.
Yeah, so, me too on that one.
And then, you know, like my team members is leading by example and just having constant communication, you know, getting my hands dirty first and living my life in a way that is motivating for them that, you know, hey, he's willing to do this. He's willing to sacrifice. He's willing to do to go on a Sunday out of town or Saturday and leave his family. You know, that's, I believe, how I motivate other people, because I'm not asking them to do anything I'm not willing to do myself. You know, my family is super important for me, because I always think back of, I couldn't imagine. I mean, you know, and let your listeners just sit back and ask yourself this question. You know, can you imagine how you would explain to your children or your wife or your husband, you know, the people that love you the most, the people that support you the most, want to see you win, get excited for you the most out of everybody else, that you quit doing something, that you quit on a goal, or that you gave up on something? Like, how do you explain that to your kids when you're trying to teach them to execute and live their life at above mediocre standards? So for me, like, that drives me a lot, that, you know, I have to be able to show my kids that and show my wife that, because I want them to be proud of me.
I agree with that. And I will say, I have made the wrong decisions before and not led by that example, or not, like, I don't give up on anything. But I have given up on something recently that I shouldn't have. And I set a poor example. And it will eat you, and it will influence you, and you will lose trust and all those things. So I think that that's an important thing for the audience as well. I mean, what Justin is saying here is more than just doing it. It's the problem is you don't want to break things apart by breaking that trust. And you certainly want to be able to lead by example and consistency over a lifetime and do what you say you're going to do, because that's always the hard part. I forget what else you said, but there was something that you anchored that I thought was really important related to, you know, having the anxiety. I think it's the same thing for me. If I'm not moving forward, I'm not moving, and it causes anxiety like crazy. And it's in a good way. There's that anxiety. I've had bad anxiety where it feels like the world's blowing up or everything's falling into a million pieces. But it's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about that anxiety that pushes you to go do something. And if you don't do something, that anxiety is just going to sit there. So I will say one of my best tools or triggers that someone helped me with is that I need to have that trigger inside me. When I start getting anxieties, get up or go do something or go for a walk, whatever you have to do, but start doing something productive ASAP, because it'll help relieve it, and it'll help you put it in perspective, and it'll help you identify what you need to do to help relieve that, because it's usually to help you in the most part, if the mental health is good. So the other thing you said, which I thought was good, was about a problem solver. That's me too. I think I have a lot of value in myself about being a problem solver, or fixing problems for people, or taking care of my family, or taking care of the people I care about. But I had a mentor about 5 years ago tell me that I'm robbing them of the dignity of learning the lessons themselves, or learning the lessons, period. And at first I'm like, huh, well then what's the point of a parent to guide their children if you're not like helping them or guiding them in that way? But once I realized that I have to stop solving every problem. There's some that I need to solve. That's being a protector, a parent. And again, weirdly, this came forefront in me over the last 9 months. And I've had some screw ups where I knew this information, but I didn't practice it for some reason. Too much stress, I guess, or trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life in the middle of identity crisis. But the thing is you've got to have people the dignity to do things on their own sometimes. And the miracles for me have happened when I've let go sometimes, and they do it on their own accord, and I don't have to ask them or teach them or whatever, or they've learned the lesson. And I don't want to do that always, and it's not a great business practice because you don't want to lose money. But there's a lot of ownership in lessons when you've learned, they learn them themselves, and we give them the dignity. So again, I am a problem solver. That's who I am. I want to solve things. I want to protect my family. I want to help them. I want to do things for them. But again, at some point, I need to give them the dignity to live their own lives and be successful. So what happens if I'm not around or something bad happens to me? I don't want them not being able to have the skills or life lessons to live a good life, for example. So I'm the same way, the problem-solving thing. That's how I find value. That's one of the things I value myself the most about, which makes it extremely hard to hold it back. So,
yeah, I could relate. I'll tell you a funny story. The last year, I've gotten better at that in a way. My 18-year-old, she's a lot like me when I was her age, really driven, very stubborn. You know, if she wants it, she wants it her way. And, you know, I was trying to solve problems, and, you know, if she had an issue, we would talk about it, and I give her all this advice, and I kept noticing, like, she only took what she wanted of it. And I'm like, I told her exactly how to handle that would benefit her life in the perfect way. And so finally I was like, you know what, just like you said, you explained it great, is to give them that ability. And so I just, she would come to me for advice, and I'd say, yeah, you'll figure it out. She's like, what do you mean? I said, yeah, you'll figure it out. And it took a lot for me to do that because I'm not that person. So I've learned that, yeah, in the last year of just, okay, let you learn the lesson.
Yeah, and I've had the thing, well, you promised you were going to take care of us, and you know, sometimes it backfires, and I'm like, and I have to realize and stand strong that says, I am. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm taking care of you in the future. I'm not attached to the outcome now by giving you something and me feeling good about it. I'm letting go of that feeling good about it, and I'm detaching from it, you know, and the outcome now, and I'm concerned about who you are in the future and that you can have a good life. So yes, I do care about you, and I am going to take care of you for, but this is the way that I do it, because if I'm not around, taking care of you, or me taking care of you, is actually giving you the skills to take care of yourself. And it's the craziest thing to me, because it almost is backwards logic as men, or as whatever that goes on in our brain, but it does make sense, and it is rewarding for sure. So, Justin, where can they find you online? Where can they find your website? How can they get a hold of you if they're interested in your fitness programs and health programs and diet programs?
Website is www.justintid.com. So the name's, you know, Justin, J-U-S-T-I-N, Tid is T-I-D-D. And then Instagram is the best way. It's Tid_Justin on Facebook and TikTok too. But really, Instagram is where you'll find me the most. I put the most content out and respond the fastest.
Awesome. Thank you, everyone, for listening in. I appreciate you guys. Again, you can find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. And you can find me on Instagram at Justin Bizarro, B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. Thank you, everyone. I appreciate you guys. I love you guys. And we're out.